Hey, welcome to Off Leash with Dr. Pete. I am Dr. Pete, and we're glad you joined us for today's show. We're going to be advocate for your pet, just like we always are, and we're going to share some information with you that maybe you've not heard before. So hopefully we have a show that you enjoy today.
Yes, and I am the co-host, Molly Van Vranken, and we have a lot of exciting topics for today.
Yep.
So first one that we're going to get into is old dogs, new tricks.
Well, I don't know that this is going to be a new trick, but in essence, I dress for this occasion today.
So I've got my
Dickman Road sweatshirt on, and it's the veterinary clinic I founded back in the 70s. And I wore this with pride, but the thing I put on underneath it was a picture of my dog Bandit.
Okay.
I hope you can see him.
How old is that t-shirt?
Oh, cow.
Can I guess?
You know what? It was given to me at least 30 years old. I got it out to wear today. I don't think I've put it on before, but I've actually never worn it around.
Yeah.
This is a dog I got when I first founded my practice.
I don't think I've ever seen a picture of Bandit.
Nope. He was a really good dog. And I'm going to tell you about him. He came to our place with two broken legs, and the guy came in and he says, "Hey, listen, I don't care what it takes to fix up my boy Bandit here, but you don't have to worry about anything.
Cost
is no issue," because he wasn't going to pay it in the first place. So we took Bandit in. And what maybe we would have done is started putting fixators on him, except we kind of knew that we were stuck with him, and he was in a crate or a cage at the veterinary clinic. So we took him out and walked him 3 or 4 or 5 times a day, and he had two splints on, one on the front and one on the back. He had a broken tibia, which is below the knee. They were kind of diagonal to each other, and then his right front, he had a fracture right here in the radius ulna, and we splinted that.
He was just a hot mess.
He was a mess. And so I got this dog, and I really liked him. He was a really nice dog. And you know, the thing I liked about him the most was when you walk back to look and see how he was doing, he would get up and greet you and wag his tail, and then he would take his whole body and just press it against the bar.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that.
So he could
present himself.
So you could see the whole dog.
Yeah.
And so what did I learn? I mean, I kind of knew that what we want to do is put him on a high plane of nutrition, because we need to have him heal. He was a young dog, and with young dogs, I think you're given a little bit more leeway that they'll heal easily, much more than older dogs and stuff. So anyway, we splinted him before too long while we took his splint off his front leg.
Right.
And when he walked, he couldn't place his foot very well. Everything had healed from here on up, but right here, he had a lack of flexibility in his feet, so he'd drag his toes when he walked down the hallway. Yeah, it's all right. He was happy.
He was a happy boy.
He was pain-free up, and then the tibia healed. It was a little crooked, but it healed fine, and so we were off and running. And so
his owner never came back to get him.
So I took him home, and of course, I had to house train him because he'd been down there, but he was not too bad. And I keep an eye on him. I'd take him to work every day. And so he went into work every day, and that got to be a thing for the rest of his life. He went to work every day.
How old was he when you got him?
Oh, he was probably maybe 8 or 9 months, something like
that. Oh, so he was like a puppy.
Yeah, so I had him 15, 16 years.
That's crazy.
And he was a great dog. And I could have skipped my last year of veterinary school if I'd have got that dog in the last year of veterinary school, because I'd have had the broken bone class covered. He was flea allergic, so if he got fleas and he... And being at a veterinary clinic with dogs walking in and out all day, I mean, we tried to keep stuff on him and everything, but he still got fleas. And when he did, he was pretty itchy. And so he had flea allergies. So we allergy tested him to see what he was allergic to. And I learned that. And then I had my 30th birthday party, and we cooked a hog, roasted a hog outside. And so my friends came over and became overserved, and so they gave him all this pork, and he got pancreatitis.
Then he went
out the next day and ate the dirt where the pork had been. So he got really bad pancreatitis. And that's when I learned that I wasn't very good at treating my own dog. I knew what I was doing with other people's dogs, but I wasn't very good with my own dog.
Do you think that there's like an emotional thing there?
Yeah, well, I changed the rules for my dog. I changed all the rules. The rules were all different. So anyway, so I changed the rule for my dog, and I remember Dr. Ellis at the clinic. He was my partner, my first partner. And that's what he says. Listen, you idiot. You know, you don't want to, you have to have this dog, and he has to be on pain control, and he has to be on IV fluids to get all this worked out of him. So we did that, and he survived. Although he got pancreatitis off and on in his life when he got
into... I was going to say, doesn't it never go away, pancreatitis?
Well, it just gets, it comes back a little easier every time. And for those who don't know what pancreatitis is as they eat these really high-fat meals, and these really high-fat meals will create all those chylomicrons in the blood, and it causes the pancreas to get really upset. And then the pancreas gets inflamed. It's extremely painful.
Then they have to be on a low-fat diet the rest of their life.
They need to be at least not, maybe not on a low-fat diet, but you sure can't, you can't take them to the store and have them shop for you or anything, because they'll pick the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
And so he would get that from time to time. He'd get pancreatitis from time to time. And then he hurt his back, and I had to have his defenestrated by the neurosurgeon at Michigan State, Dr. Gretchen Flo. And so she fixed him up for me. So he had all sorts of stuff go on.
He's a hot mess.
Yeah. And when he got old, he actually got cognitive dysfunction.
Aww.
And where he became confused and everything. So what I'm really telling you today is this dog was really a good teacher. Because right now when I get dogs that come in, they got diabetes. I have to look at the client like I'm looking at you and go, hey, listen, I don't have a dog with diabetes. I can tell you how to treat it. I can tell you how to, you know, what the ground rules are. It's like teaching somebody a card game, but you got to go out and play the card game because I don't have that deck of cards at home.
Mm-hmm.
So you go home and learn how to regulate a diabetic, whether it's a cat or a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so really that was kind of the way it was with him. When I had dogs with broken legs, I kind of knew what those people went through. And I had dogs that were flea allergic, I kind of knew what those dogs went through. And I had dogs with pancreatitis, kind of knew what those dogs went through.
So he taught you a lot.
Yeah. When I had dogs with a ruptured disc in their back, you kind of knew, you knew how to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of got the hang of it. When they got cognitive dysfunction, I knew what cognitive dysfunction was because, quite frankly, I'd had one.
I love that you took him everywhere with you.
Yeah, he went everywhere. I remember we went, there's a little restaurant in town up there on Columbia, Findlay's.
Was it still?
Yes, it was Findlay's, I think.
Okay,
then, yeah.
At the time.
And anyway, there's all these booths that go up and down the front of the building. So, and he got out, we went there for lunch one day, and he got out and sat on the back of our vet truck. Many of you may be aware that veterinarians, when we were doing large animal, would have these fiberglass boxes that sit on the back of the truck. Anyway, it was pulled in there and had a pass-through window. So he jumps out the window and sits on the back of the truck watching us eat while everybody watched him sit out on the back of the truck. Because I could look up the way there, and I'm like, nobody was talking. They were just watching that dog sit out. They were eating and watching that dog sit out on the back of that box. He was a great dog. I mean, take him on farm calls and stuff, and he'd get out and roll the manure and all sorts of stuff.
Didn't you bring him into a bar at one point?
Oh, yeah. We went out one night on a Friday night on our little color tour, you went in the place, and it had a big window in there, and he'd stand up on
the back of the truck.
No, not on the back, not on the back of the truck, on the dash. It was winter.
Okay.
So I'd have a big, like a little bed in there for him with a blanket and everything. He'd get in there. Well, he wanted to come in the bar, and it's like, so he'd stand up on there and look in, and there were these ladies in the building that were like, why don't you just go out and get him and bring him in? I said, no, the health department is not going to like having this dog in this bar, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna guarantee you they won't like that. And so, but those ladies had a couple of drinks, so they grabbed the keys off the table and went out and let him. He waltzed in with these ladies, and then he took one look at me and then went in the kitchen. And so he looked at me as if to say,
did you have to run back and grab him?
Yeah, I had to go back into the kitchen. And of course, the people in there, what the hell, dude?
Who brought your dog in?
He brought your dog in, and he went in our kitchen. You know, we'll get a complaint from the health department. You know, now you can have
service dog.
Service dog, yeah, you can drag them in.
Well, now you can get an emotional support dog too.
Yeah, I probably needed that at that point in my life, but nonetheless, yeah.
I like that, though, because I brought, when I got my first dog, Sage. Well, my first dog that was mine, mm-hmm. when she was in college, I brought her to classes with me.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was a puppy, because all puppies do is ever sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take her for a little walk before class, and then I'd bring her in, and I'd put my jacket on the floor, and I'd put her on the jacket, and she'd sleep throughout the whole class. And I think it was finally probably a month or two into this lecture, and the professor never walked up the steps. And he walked up the steps and looks over, and he goes, do you have a dog with you here? And I'm like, yeah. I bring her in every day. And he's like, I've never noticed because she would just sleep.
Well, Bandit, this was this dog's name, Bandit. He didn't like your mother.
No.
No, well, I can't say he disliked her. I just don't think he cared one way or the other.
Was he like one of those dogs that just like one person?
Yeah, he liked me. He
just,
liked me.
Just, well, wait. Just you? Like if anybody else?
No, he had a couple of the ladies at work that would give him treats
and bribe him.
He was kind of a parasite. He liked them really well. And he was a fun dog. I mean, you'd take him places. And we used to, in the middle of the day, we'd be in the exam room. It wasn't the middle of the day. It was the end of the morning, like 11:45 or 11, mm-hmm. 11:30. And I say, well, Bandit, I think it's about time to go get something to eat. And he'd run to the back door. And I said, I got another patient to see. Not going quite yet. And then he'd run back up. And then he'd sit on the stairs, or he'd actually lay on the stairs. And there was a hole where he could see back through the entire hallway.
Yeah.
You know, where the stairs went up to the top.
Yeah.
And he'd sit there and he'd do that all day long. And
aww.
Then, but he had an internal clock, meant he knew when we were, because if you looked at him at 11:30, 11:45, the tail would start wagging.
Yeah.
Are we going? Because this is my first dog. I ruined my first dog. I always tell people not to feed him from the table, blah, blah, blah. And of course, you know, I wasn't taking my own advice. I do now. I'm much better about that now. I feed
all my dogs from this.
Yeah, I know you shouldn't.
Well, do not that. Not my client dogs, but my personal dogs.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't do that either. So that was a great dog, and I mean, I learned a lot. So when a dog had a ruptured disc in his back, I knew what it looked like. I knew how you treated him.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what to expect for results. You know, because you lived through that, you'd had that experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really like. Looking at National Geographic or going to the country which they're describing. If you go mm-hmm. to the country they're describing, you get the whole deal. But if you just look at a National Geographic, you don't get it. But I knew what flea allergy dermatitis was. And by the way, that's when dogs become allergic to the saliva that they leave when the flea bites them. So that's called a metabolite, and it's made out of protein. So that's what that is. And most dogs are going to be allergic to fleas. Some are a lot more than others.
Right.
I think that's the one thing you'll probably notice is that they have what's called a threshold. And I'd read about thresholds and everything, but I knew exactly what they were talking about when I had that dog.
Right.
Yep. And I knew exactly what they were talking about when they said pancreatitis. I mean, I'd had that dog and I knew what I had to tell them to keep this from happening because I had to keep that from happening.
Right.
He must have taught me a whole bunch of other stuff. I just... have failed to.
Did you have him at the same time you had Buddy?
Nope. I got Buddy after I had him.
How'd you get Buddy?
Same thing. Somebody brought him in.
Is that how you've gotten all your dogs?
I say all my stuff is cast offs. Yeah. Yeah.
Someone brought Buddy in. Did Buddy have a broken leg?
No, he didn't have anything, but I can't remember what his deal was. But then again, there was another dog you learned a lot from because he was the one dog that I've ever had that needed to have his rectum pinched all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had impacted anal glands part of his life or all of his life or some of his life.
Buddy only liked you.
Yep, and he didn't care for anybody else.
No.
So, and I think that was kind of the way it was with these two dogs is they both go to work and they'd sit around and they'd work the receptionist for food.
Mm-hmm.
And Buddy was bad because he'd actually go and get in people's purses and pull them out of the cupboard and see if because he could smell the food in there. Yeah,
that's funny.
Anyway, they were a lot of fun. I remember Bandit, he was pretty cool one day. He comes down the basement. He's got a bone in his mouth. And he goes over and we had other dogs. It's Sunny at the time also. And he walks over in the basement and he puts it over on the wall. And then he kind of moves a little bit one way or the other. Then he walks all the way back to where I'm sitting and then looks over there to see if he can see it. Well, he realizes it's not hidden. And
right.
The other dog will see it and the other dog will get it. So he goes over and fetches it and waltzes upstairs. I didn't think much of it. I just thought, well, he's trying to hide this thing. He'll probably find a place he can hide it. The Sunny won't get it.
Right.
So I'm going along, you know, it's like a year later. And I put on a pair of shoes, and the damn thing's in the pair of shoes. And because I remember what it looked like and everything. Mm-hmm. And I put my shoe on it, like, what the hell? And he'd hidden that bone in there, probably forgotten he'd hidden it because he'd never gone back and got it.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Aww. Fun dog. Just a lot of fun. And, you know, if I could have had him in my wedding, I probably would have. But
yeah.
I didn't have that choice.
You got vetoed on it?
I got vetoed on that, yep.
Probably because he didn't care for Sharon.
probably didn't care for Sharon necessarily. He could have been the ring bearer. I don't think that was going to, he'd have pawned it before he let me put it on her finger.
I believe that.
Yep.
Oh my goodness.
That's the way it is. And then I looked at that dog. I used to look at that dog and I'm like, God, he sure doesn't like you, does he, Sharon?
Would he growl at her?
Oh yeah. He didn't have any use for her at all.
Oh my God.
And I told her, you know what I told her one day? I said, you know, I'm kind of sorry I neutered that dog. That'd be the kind of breed of dog that men would like to have.
Yeah. Oh,
you know, it's
my
like,
gosh.
When I was a kid, they had Spanky in our gang, and Spanky was in charge of the Women Haters Club.
Yeah.
And I think that was, I think Bandit liked women if they had something to eat, but other than that, that was a big deal with them.
That was it.
He loved to have treats. Yep.
Aww.
Yep.
I wish I would have met
anyway,
him.
Anyway, this was my second diploma right here.
The second, the dog.
Yeah, the dog.
Just owning the dog.
Yeah. And he was a lot of fun. And,
yeah.
I hear people say this all the time. I was single at the time, didn't have any kids or anything, just a girlfriend working my tail off. And you can't relive that part of your life. He was just a ton of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think about him. Of course, every once in a while I clean my closet up, but I always make sure I save this shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the veterinarians gave me this, Dr. Barron, as a kind of almost kind of like a gag gift.
Yeah.
And then when he died, let's see, my mother was gone, but my dad took me out to lunch one day, and he says, well, I knew you'd feel bad about that dog. And to be honest with you, my dad was the last one I'd have thought would have ever understood how I felt about that dog. And of course, then it was hard to eat because you're emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah. But my dad is, as much as he didn't seem to be like that, he was like that. So,
yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yep. Yep.
I think about that all the time when Sage passes away.
Yep.
It's going to be a sad day.
Hopefully, it'll be a long time.
Hopefully.
Yep.
Well, do you want to do Canine Chronicles today? News in the dog world?
You know, the news in the dog world, you know, they're bringing a few drugs out, and I think I've talked a little bit in the past about this monoclonal antibody that they're using to treat parvo with,
mm-hmm.
and the one they're using to treat arthritis with. Both of these have been very successful, and I talked a little bit about this earlier in the year, but the further I get in, the more confidence we have in those helping with dogs and their arthritis and helping with those puppies that have parvovirus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expensive to treat the dogs with the parvo one. You know, it can be $300 to $400 to treat them. But at least I will tell you, it actually cuts the amount of time that these dogs are in the veterinary hospital. So you're going to spend $300 or $400 and probably save $500. Because otherwise you spend $900, maybe $1,000 having them in the hospital. And sooner they get better and get out and recover, the less money you're going to spend. So it's actually a...
Parvo dogs can be expensive.
Yeah, when you see it, most people are like, their jaw drops when they see what it costs for the monoclonal antibody. But it did its job and it actually saved them money. So just remember, there's a lot of things you do that may cost you money but may save you... What do they used to say? There's never time to do it right, but there's always time to do it over. So I've often been a fan of let's try to do it right the first time. And so if you're given that choice and somebody in your family or you have a dog that has parvo, I'd opt out for the monoclonal antibody for the parvovirus.
You also have a saying, if it's expensive.
Yeah, if it's cheap and it doesn't work, it was expensive.
Yeah.
If it's expensive and it worked, it was cheap. You buy something for a nickel and it doesn't work, it's the most expensive thing you did all day.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought it for $50 and it worked, it was the cheapest thing you did all day.
Mm-hmm.
So that people got to get over that. You know, I think as young veterinarians, we always were like, well, this is going to cost a lot of money. That's going to cost a lot of money. Sometimes you just got to say, let's just do this the right way.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Buy once, cry once.
Yep.
That's what I always say whenever I make a purchase. Yep. I'd rather buy something nice the first time than buy something
and enjoy it
that's going to break and I'm going to have to replace later on.
And have buyer's remorse.
Yes. Most definitely. All right, you ready for some rock and roll history? Have
sure.
your song all pulled up. Today, I believe it is the Knickerbockers.
Yeah, Knickerbockers out of New Jersey someplace. Yeah. So this was, the thing on this song was everybody thought this was the Beatles.
Doing, I was going to say, it sounds like the Beatles.
Yeah, everybody thought this was the Beatles doing... a song with somebody else's name on it. Everyone saw somebody do that. Guess Who did it? Or not the Guess Who, but the Four Seasons did it one time when they called themselves the Guess Who. And actually after that, there was a Guess Who, but it was like, guess who that was? It was, in fact, the Four Seasons. In this case, this was not the Beatles. This was these guys from New Jersey. And this is a kind of a one-hit wonder. I don't think they ever had another song after that.
It looks like a group like the Beatles.
Yeah, yeah, it's that time. I mean, it was high school. It was high school for me. And I want to say it was probably 66, 65, something like that. Anyway, this is a real snappy song, upbeat. I mean, I always really liked this song. They were one-hit wonder. I don't think they ever appeared on the face of the earth again. But they were like a lot of bands at the time, you know, that somebody listened to something they did and liked it. And they got a recording contract and didn't do much with the contract. And but this song was really, really popular. I can't remember how far up the...
Someone must have given this guy the brown helmet, because this song is depressing.
This is?
Yeah, it's saying lies, lies. All I ever get from you is tears, tears.
Yeah,
well, a million tears from you.
The brown helmet song. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the brown helmet stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, most people wrote stuff on their experiences in life.
In relationships.
Yeah. Someday we'll have to do the Buckinghams, because they had a series of hits based on relationship between the songwriter and some girl named Susan.
Really?
So, yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll do that sometime. Maybe I'll see if I can go find a Buckingham's t-shirt.
And there you
we'll
go.
We'll do that someday. But from New Jersey, pretty damn good rock and roll song.
Love that. All right, now we're going to get into our main segment, Information and Peace of Mind. And we are going to be chatting about blood work in dogs and why it's important to get it done at your veterinary office.
Yeah, you know, too many people wouldn't get blood work done after the dog's sick. And
how often should you get blood work
done?
Well,
I think by the time dog's 4 or 5 years of age, it's sometimes not a bad idea to just have, right now we call it a heartworm wellness profile, and you get the Lyme Ehrlichia anaplasmosis Lyme disease, and then you get a CBC, and which is a complete blood cell count, and that's your white cells,
right,
your red cells. See how many platelets you got, and I'll see, you know, make sure you don't have an iron deficiency, you know, little things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chemistry profile, there's not a lot in that, but there's a couple chemistries for liver and a couple chemistries for kidneys, and then there's a blood sugar. There's an albumin to make sure that you don't not losing any albumin or you're making enough. And so, I really can't tell you, you know, we're going to talk about this, but it's hard to say what you're going to see in any given time, because so many little things will point to something that you want to go ahead. So you check this out and your alkaphos is like 500 or 600, and you think, well, that's a lot higher than it ought to be. But most of the time we don't get too worried about alkaphos till it gets to be a 4 or 5 times what it should normally be. You come in a year later, now it's 800. Now I had something to look at last time, 500. Now it's higher, 800. So now I probably ought to start looking at stuff.
Right.
Asking questions of clients to find out, you know, what they've noticed. What's different? Have you gained weight? Have you lost weight? So it isn't just a blood work. It's all everything that kind of goes into this. Are you gaining weight? Are you losing weight? You know, probably one of the most common things, you know, I'll chew somebody out for a listen. Sweetheart, your dog's kind of heavy. I'm not supposed to call it sweetheart, but, you know, that's what you do. And if somebody I know, hey, this dog's too heavy. And they'll tell you.
You've offended some people. I have been in rooms with you where made people cry.
Let's not talk about
from
that.
Let's
not talk about that. But then they'll say, well, you know, because I look back at my records, I'm like, hey, you know, look at this. You know, I told you your dog needs to lose weight. Now you bring him in, he's 10 pounds heavier. And they're like, honest to God, doctor, I actually cut the food down by about 25%, and my dog is still fat. Okay. And...
Are they lying?
Well, that's you got three things. They can either be a liar, which frequently is what's going on, because they aren't feeding the dog much food, but they get them all sorts of, you know, peanut brittle and all sorts of crap, mm-hmm. you know, and they're just feeding them everything. And I can always tell that. Does your dog like this? Yeah. Does your dog like that? No. He likes this and this and this, but not that. He used to like this, but didn't like it anymore. Blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
So I notice why the dog's fat, because it's like, you know, the dog... They're buying $150 worth of groceries every week, and 45 of it goes down the dog's gullet. And
mm-hmm.
So I know that that's what's going on. So, but there are certain medical conditions, specifically Cushing's, where the adrenals are producing too much cortisol that allow those dogs to gain weight and lose hair and look real unthrifty, drink a lot of water. And then there's the sleeper that we don't think of very often, but is fairly often, which is hypothyroid, which is your thyroids are right here in your mm-hmm. throat. And sometimes they'll get sick. The thyroids will get sick and not produce enough thyroid hormone.
Okay.
And so what happens is your metabolism goes way down. So now it's like having a governor on a school bus that can only go 25 miles an hour. So you go 25 miles an hour, you're not burning much gas. So then they start to gain weight. They usually have kind of a tragic look on their face and stuff. And most veterinarians, once they've been out of school for years, kind of get used to seeing these and kind of noticing what they are.
Right.
And they'll look them. So then we'll run a T4 thyroid, or we'll send it into Michigan State and actually have a full profile done.
Yeah.
And the full profile is helpful because some of these dogs have what's called Hashimoto's, which is an immune mediated thing, where the body starts to reckon its own thyroid hormone. Hashimoto's is kind of a human thing. Don't call it Hashimoto's in our business, but we call it Hashimoto's because it's the same thing that occurs in people. Then you get sick thyroids that'll eventually get better and produce thyroid, or you get thyroids that are deader than a doornail and never going to produce another thing. So you can kind of figure that all out. You may have to monitor off and on. But you know, lots of times when you're doing your blood profiles, let's just like say, yeah, this dog's really fat, blah, 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 blah. And I look at the blood profile and the cholesterol is like 390, 400. And I'm like, oh, this should be like less than 200.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm like, oh, your cholesterol is really high and your dog's fat and lazy and a heat seeker, wants to sleep on the registers or near the oven or everything, lay in the sun, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's run a thyroid. But we would not have figured it out had we not weighed them, and we wouldn't have figured it out if we hadn't looked at the cholesterol. So we, every time we see something, there's this five or six or seven diseases that sometimes pop up in our head. So what are we thinking when we have those things pop up in our head? You know, it's hard to have that kind of conversation with a client because it's too many things. And sometimes if you talk about too many things, the client becomes confused.
Right.
And a lot of the times I go back to do the blood work, or what if this, or what if that? And I'm like, I don't even want to talk about what ifs. Let's talk about when we get the blood work back, let's see what it is. Because if I sit here and talk to you for a while, I'll have you so damn confused. Hell, if I'm not lucky, I'll have myself confused. So just give me a damn good history. I'll pull the blood and we'll kind of go from there. And you can kind of figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And every presentation's different. They're sort of like Rubik's cubes. You can have all sorts of combinations of things popping up.
Right.
And it's hardly ever all the same color like it is when you get the Rubik's cube down. But so that's what you got to do. You got to look at it. And you got to be able to look even at the normal things. Even the normal things sometimes aren't normal. So
how so?
Well,
give me an example.
Like a blood urea nitrogen. And that usually tells you whether you're in kidney failure. So every once in a while, somebody brought a little puppy in and he was sick and they say it's kind of weird, blah, blah, blah. And I do a BUN and the normal's like 7 to 31, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the BUN is 8. And it's like, oh, it's in the normal range. Well, it's like, no, it's not a normal. It isn't a normal range. But this is a puppy eating a high protein diet.
Puppy should be higher.
Yeah, it should be in the 17, 18, 19 range, 20. So it's normal, but it's not normal,
not normal
for a dog that's eating a high protein diet. So then you
right.
kind of now what I'm thinking is this dog has a portal systemic shunt, which I'm not going to go into, but it's where the blood doesn't go through the liver, so it doesn't get made into blood urea nitrogen, which is a process that goes on in the liver because this blood is actually missing. This is like getting off the main highway and taking the back route in. Okay, that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And then these dogs are thin. They don't feel good. Sometimes they're even a little neurologic because what happens before it becomes BUN, blood urea nitrogen, it's ammonia. So if they eat a high protein diet, like what you got them on, and that ammonia goes up, they get a little spacey because the ammonia gives them this
kind of like high.
Well, it's a hepatic encephalopathy is what we call it. But because when you have that ammonia, it doesn't get converted over into blood urea nitrogen,
okay? Right.
Which gets made into muscle and stuff. So these are kind of
this is wild. How many different things you can tell from blood work?
And which is really, I really hate to get started on this right here because, quite frankly, I think that when we look at these things, and lots of times we have to look at them and go, okay, well, I've got it narrowed down to about 7 things. And people are like, well, that didn't help much. No, it was hundreds or thousands before we started. Now we're down to 7. So actually, it's a good thing. And then that's the other client you get. The other client's mm-hmm. like, gee whiz, we spent all this money and didn't find anything. Well, you didn't want to find anything. Did you want to have bad news? And at least that
now. It's kind of your saving grace is when you don't find anything.
Now I have the thing. It was like last time your dog was, BUN was 17, the creatinine was 0.9. The albumin was 3.4. So I've got all these things that were like what they were when your dog was normal. If I run it in a year or two, now I look and I can go ahead and look back at all the other things that were just like that.
Yeah,
Have things changed a lot?
Yeah. I've seen you read blood work and it blows my mind the amount of information that goes into reading, like what you can tell from blood work.
Well, when I got out of school, they just wanted you to run a couple of things. Pick a test and then run it because the client won't pay for more than that. Well, now they bundle them up to where they're...
You can run multiple things at once.
It's cost effective to do that, yeah. And then the thing is, what kind of blood work do you want to do? You want to do the kind where I send it into a lab and I get it back and then I call and talk to you? Or do you want to do it to where you walk out of the building and I've already told you what's going on?
What is the absolute worst thing that you can find from blood work?
Well, I had a doctor the other day had autoimmune hemolytic anemia, which means it had a really...
Slow that down. Autoimmune what?
Autoimmune hemolytic anemia. So it had a low hematocrit, which means it had low hemoglobin. It didn't have very many red cells. And it had an awful lot of white cells, which meant that probably this dog was attacking its own red cells. So it's an autoimmune disease.
And is that something that they could die within?
That dog did die within.
Oh, but, no.
Yep. It had been a dog that had diarrhea off and on for a couple of weeks and stuff. And what had happened, and we don't know why this happens, but dogs will get autoimmune diseases. You know, like people get lupus, pemphigus. And pemphigus is an autoimmune disease of the skin. Discoid lupus, where you lose some of the...
Lupus is pretty manageable, though, through diet, right?
Well, no, it's usually immune-mediated drugs. You know, you have to be on azathioprine, pred, cyclosporin, something like that.
Okay.
So you have to be on drugs. So yeah, you can find stuff, and that's what I told this guy. You need to come right back in. I'm gonna give you fistfuls of prednisolone and then a big time injection of dexamethasone, and you're gonna come back and see me in a few days. And when he came back, it was bad news. Yep. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. So if we'd have caught it earlier, would that have been better? Well, lots of times, if you catch a little earlier in the disease, you have a little more time to fuss around with your dosages.
Okay. Right.
So then you go, do I want to give them a milligram per pound per day or do I want to give them 2 milligrams per pound per day? You know, and I think I went in the middle and I think if I had to do it over again, I'd have done more, but I didn't have much time to figure it out. There's a lot of side effects from giving 2 milligrams per pound. That's a ton of prednisolone.
And plus when you give pred, the dog doesn't eat
well,
as much.
Well, they actually usually eat like hell because pred usually...
What am I thinking of? D-penicillamine is the one that they don't eat on. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So pred, yeah, usually makes them what they call polyphagic, makes them real hungry.
That's right.
Yeah, and usually real thirsty.
Oh, yeah, because pred is what makes them urinate all the time.
Yeah, and then they got to bring his dog back in. And
I got to get my medication straight.
Well, dog's drinking a ton of water and peeing in the house, and the guy comes in and tells me, my wife says you're an asshole for making our dog pee all over the house. I'm like, I'm trying to save your dog's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right about the asshole part, but I'm just...
But I'm the asshole that's going to save your dog's life.
All right, well, the drugs, I'm not going to be the one. The drugs will do that. I'll help you with that. So, and it's just about anything you deal with. It's kind of a you and I problem, you and I. And, if you got something wrong with one of your dogs, it's a Molly problem. You just had something wrong with one of your dogs. It was a Molly problem.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I'm going to guess maybe they even did a little blood work on your dog before they did the workup. But
I don't think that they did.
Yeah.
I think that they just, well, I think that they assumed since she was so young.
Yep.
That.
Yep. Well,
I've
you know, and that's,
blood
it, that's the other thing. I mean, and I think by 4 or 5 years of age, you ought to be doing some blood work. Now, listen, sometimes people come in and have their dog neutered, and they're like, well, you know, I read in a book where you're supposed to have blood work done before you do it. And I'm like, you know, how many pair of shoes your dog chewed up in the last month? 3. Okay. Your dog's probably healthy enough to be neutered today.
If
the dogs we always worry about are like the ones that come in and say, this is such a nice dog. This is the nicest dog we've ever had. He's so quiet, and he just lays there and doesn't...
Like that one?
Yeah, doesn't destroy anything. Oh, this dog's older. This dog destroyed crap. Anyway, this is... So when they're young and people say, well, this is a really nice dog, I think, oh, boy, this ain't good. You know, because normally I'm telling people, hey, listen, you got a Labrador Retriever. You might as well sign up for the Payless plan, you know, which is a... which is store the cells
yeah.
inexpensive shoes, because you're probably going to be replacing them every 3 or 4 weeks until they kind of get over doing their thing, or you're going to have to put them in the closet and close the closet, one of the two.
Yeah.
But anyway, we see that all the time. And you know, in fact, one of the things I always worry about sometimes is somebody tells me this is the runt of the litter. Okay, now the runt, see, the runt's the runt for one or two reasons. Either it's sucking hind tit, which is a term. Have you ever heard that term?
No, okay. Explain it to me.
Sucking hind tit means it's the last teat on the dog's breast. Yeah. And sometimes doesn't have as much milk on it. So
they're not giving as much nutrients.
So, yeah, you know, as a kid, if there was somebody that was like trying to get over 5'2" or 5'3", and it was like, oh, he must have been sucking hind tit. That was kind of a term that was used. You don't say it much anymore because of all the sensitivity stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, sucking hind tit, or they got something really wrong. Kidney yeah. disease, a liver shunt, heart murmur, blah, blah,
blah. Well, do you
blah,
remember
blah.
When I got Sage? You called me when you went to go pick her up because she was the tiniest one of the litter.
Yeah.
And you were like, I would not get this dog.
I would get this dog. That was, and I think that dog was quote unquote on hind tit.
Yeah.
And
now she's, I think, the biggest female out of that litter. Yeah. So for anybody getting a dog, the runt does not mean it's going to be the smallest.
Well,
one.
You know, when people have puppies, I mean, I always tell that to people, you know, listen to what you should do. You should make sure they're all gaining weight. And if they all look differently, then you make a log and then you weigh them every day or every other day mm-hmm. on food scales
right.
just to see what they weigh.
Right.
And then you can figure out which one's fading and which one's not.
She was a tiny little thing. Yeah. She was 3.9
pounds. We've done blood work on her before and she's very healthy. And
3.9 pounds as a lab going home is tiny.
Yeah, well.
I think she was almost,
I looked at what you paid and I thought per pound that was
quite a bit.
That was more expensive.
Well,
than,
now when
that
I
was
pick
a lot
up,
more expensive than Russian caviar. So yeah. I thought, oh my gosh.
Well, now when I pick up a lab puppy, they're like around 10 pounds, mm-hmm. a lot heavier. She was tiny.
Yeah, she was tiny. Well, I think you got her maybe when she's 7 weeks old, or
she was 8 weeks.
Yeah, 8 weeks, but she was small.
She was so small.
But she got much bigger and healthy. I mean, she's healthy and everything. So
that's
the important thing. But then, yeah, you do a little blood work, and we've done a little blood work on her from time to time, and it's fairly normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's what, you do blood work just to, you know, we always talk about information and peace of mind. So I give you the information, and then you either have peace of mind or you don't. And sometimes, if you've got something that's wrong, the peace of mind is the fact that now there's something wrong, but you're going to do something about it.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the peace of mind part. But you got to read these things.
Well, you got to do the work to figure out the problem.
Yeah, probably the biggest problem I have is every once in a while somebody reads them and doesn't pick up the little things that turn into the big things. And that just means you got to take your time in reading the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can even diagnose, well, not truly diagnose, but you can see an indication of copper storage disease in the blood work.
You can, high ALTs. And you get a lab and they got a high ALT and they're 4 or 5 years of age or a Doberman or a Dalmatian or a Westie or hell, for that matter, any dog, you shouldn't be having high ALTs on.
Yeah. When we were at the vet conference, I was talking to people about the high ALTs, and a lot of people were like, oh, no, it doesn't really concern me much.
Yeah. Well, high ALTs, just for the user who are listening, that's a leakage enzyme that comes out of the hepatocytes or the cells in the liver. So leakage enzyme is very specific for liver and liver disease. So when somebody says, in fact, I think up to normal is like 120 or something like that, 121. And honestly, if I see something that's 118, I'm thinking, getting pretty close to being high. But a lot of people read and go, that's normal. No.
Yeah.
It's getting, normal is when they're in the 30s and 40s. That's normal. Mm-hmm. So when you see them start to get a little bit high, you got to keep looking, man.
Yeah.
Got to keep looking. And then repeat it in 6 months. You know, what do we do at my place? You know what we do at my place? We
put them on the food.
Put them on Voyager dog food.
Yep.
And then check them in 3 months. And if it came back down, I can almost guarantee you
it's copper storage disease.
Well, it was going to be a copper storage disease dog.
Or that there was some buildup of copper.
No, that the liver was unhappy about something. And copper had built up in the liver, maybe. And it was unhappy. And especially if the ALK-FOS, there's two liver enzymes normally, ALK-FOS and ALT. ALT is extremely specific for the liver. ALK-FOS could be for liver, bone, muscle, all sorts of stuff.
Okay, that's good to know. Yep. That's good to know. All right, well, going into our next segment, label-wise, I know this one deeply pisses you off for some reason. I don't know why. When there is blueberries listed in the ingredients of food.
Yeah, it's down about 25th on the thing. But you get the shivers. Ooh, my dog's getting blueberries. I'm so happy. It's like there's one blueberry in a bag, lady. It ain't that big a deal. If you want blueberries on your dog food,
go to the store and get blueberries. Get blueberries.
What they're doing, and I've told Voyager clients this before. Well, what about this ingredient? What about this ingredient? I said, listen, if I didn't believe in that ingredient, I would not have it in this food. And I'll be honest with you. I said, so I'm making a diet for the dog.
Yeah.
And since they don't read, they don't complain about it.
Yeah.
And,
we're the ones that read and make that decision for them.
If it doesn't go well with them, they get diarrhea on their food or they throw up on their food, yeah, you should change food. It's probably the food. And that's always the thing I always say. If your dog likes this food, that's terrific. But if the food doesn't like the dog, that's not good at all. So the most important part, does your dog like the food? It's important. Is our food like your dog? That's more important. That's the most important. And then really, you got to figure out whether maybe it's all the other nonsense you're given. My dog has 4 bowel movements a day on your food, okay? Mm-hmm. What else is your dog getting? Well, he's getting 7 milk bones a day. Okay, milk bones have beef, milk, and wheat in them. All 3 mm-hmm. of those can cause adverse food reactions.
Or food allergies.
Food allergies. So food allergies, the ear thing. And yeah. Adverse food reactions.
So they go hand in hand pretty much,
adverse food reaction. But I think for the general public, you have to know that when your dog has 4 or 5 bowel movements a day, has a gurgly stomach, has gas, mm-hmm. vomits bile in the morning, that's an adverse food reaction.
Right.
Food allergies tend to be hot spots, ear infections.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And pretty plain and simple. And I think that's it in a nutshell.
A lot of those bougie dog foods have the ingredients at the end.
Yeah.
That are kind of bullshit.
Oh yeah, pomegranate and
rosemary.
Rosemary and all this stuff. They're just putting that on there for you.
I know.
Yep.
Well, I've seen some dog foods that are over $110-$120 a bag.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, it's the quality ingredients. Look at all these quality ingredients that they put in there.
They put a shot glass in 40,000 pounds of food and think it's a big deal. And it's like, it ain't a big deal. It's in there,
mm-hmm.
the shot glass. So hopefully they didn't put the glass in, but they put the whatever they were putting in the shot glass. And the blueberries usually aren't blueberries. They're usually blueberry,
puree.
Something like
and
that.
And it's such a small amount that it doesn't make a damn difference.
Listen, blueberries are up in the first 6 or 7 ingredients. Maybe you got yourself a hell of a deal. Maybe you do have a food that has a lot of blueberries in it. But if you just look at what blueberries cost, and by the time you take the moisture out of them, they're expensive.
Because remember, it's the list of ingredients goes from top to bottom. Most prevalent in the food.
By weight. And if it's a thing that least. Has a lot of water in it.
And like it's pre-cooked.
Right. So if they were putting watermelon in there, you could put watermelon in there. You could put 50 watermelons in 40,000 pounds of a dog food, you'd have a lot of watermelon seeds, but not much watermelon itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's 90 some odd percent water.
Yeah. And so, blueberries are mostly water, aren't they?
Sure. Yeah.
So it's,
I don't think they put those in as whole things usually.
No.
I think they're and they're so far down the thing, they wouldn't be any farther up or down if they were whole or if they weren't whole. But people look at those things, banana chips, all that stuff. If that gets you off, that's fine. I mean, we've kind of gone out of our way not to try to, my guess is if you want blueberries in your food, you go get blueberries.
Put blueberries in your food.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well.
What do you think?
Well, let's get some outro music.
There you go. This is my guy again. He sang with somebody named Tammy Terrell.
Why do you know so much about Marvin Gaye?
I don't know.
I'm trying to understand this.
Well, he's my era.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, same with Tammy Terrell. And I think she had a medical emergency on stage and died shortly thereafter. You can look that up.
I will.
Just a little piece of minutia that you probably should put someplace other than your brain.
Yeah. Okay. I'll file that one away.
Well, hey, it was a good show. Glad you guys came today. I hope you learned something. And Molly and I had a lot of fun telling it to you.
Yeah, and remember, we're here to be an advocate for your dog.
Yep, and if you prevent the preventable, you don't have to
treat the treatable. That's
there
right.
Yep. Same story, same people. See you later.
Different day.
Yep.
Thanks, guys.